Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Ryan Tannehill, quarterback for the Miami Dolphins, and I represent the Finsider with the PH.
We all represent the Finsider with a PH on this program. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Finsider Radio. My name is Keith, and I'll be your host until we're off the air at about 11 p.m. Eastern tonight. It's good to be back hosting this show. I miss you all. I hope you miss me, though I completely understand if you did not. That's okay. We're here now, and I look forward to making a complete ass of myself over the next 119 minutes or so. As always, I'm flanked by my producer, good friend, drinking buddy, and fellow pro wrestling fan, James. James, how are you this evening?
I'm good. I forgot about liking wrestling. I always forget that one.
It's acceptable if you like only the late 80s, early 90s variety, like me. I have no use for it after that point. In fact, I'm almost to the point of saying I don't really trust people who didn't watch wrestling as a kid. Now, if you watch it as an adult, I don't know. I don't really care about that. But I never
watched it as a child. My childhood was all about fishing and football, and that was pretty much it. And swimming and crap like that.
That's an important foundation for all young kids to have. Mine was certainly more TV oriented, as I often talk about. Actually, now that I think about it, I see you've managed to go a few months without upsetting any player wives. Great work there.
I still don't know where she is. Yes. She got off on her rant that I was lying, but whatever.
Yeah, it's hardly a unique situation. You're not the first. You won't be the last. And I look forward to upsetting these people again in the future for something ridiculous.
It's a goal.
Yeah, it is imperative. Is what that is. At some point tonight, we'll be joined by our resident Dolphins expert, Chris. He'll saunter in here sometime within the next few minutes, I imagine. I look forward to talking to him. We can get him involved with some of the topics.
I think that's him now. Hold on a second.
Bring him in.
Is that you, Duke?
It is.
Hey, buddy.
How are you, young man?
It's good to have you. I'm excited to do this show. I realize it's been close to a year since we've done this. I'm actually a little nervous. I feel a little bit mush-mouthed right now, so I have to make sure that I articulate everything and enunciate everything, too. Just a little bit of an overview in terms of tonight's topic, some things I want to go over. Ryan Tannehill, big pimping with that rumored deal of about $100 million. On the table. I love looking at Twitter when news like that comes out because you immediately get two camps of one side loves it and thinks he's absolutely worth that money, and then you have other people who are going absolutely insane over this deal, almost like you think like that $100 million is coming out of their pocket and their pocket alone. So there won't be any sort of a door-to-door canister collection for that money. I don't think we need to worry about that. We'll get more into it. Other things, the NFL Combine is literally just around the corner, so I want to hear from our loyal listeners and visitors on the website who they're excited to watch, anyone they think should be on the Dolphins' radar coming up here over the next few months leading up to the draft, which is the very end of April and early May. I saw Mel Kiper's second 2015 mock draft was published yesterday, so I'd like to hear from some people what they think of it. I'd like to know whether people think it's weird that Kiper and McShay always seem to agree on who the Dolphins will draft this time of year. Like, they're always in agreement. There is never – I can't remember the last time that those two had a different pick in February. I'm not sure if it's a sort of gang up effort on their part or if they're just bored. And then looking forward to next season, and whether this is the year Joe Philbin gets it right and what the Dolphins must do in order to ensure success in 2015. And I hinted at this previously, but we want to talk about what our listeners want to talk about. So give us a call at 347-326-9461 anytime after 9:30 and 9:30 Eastern, and we'll discuss whatever you want. You name it, we'll chat about it. And once again, that number is 347-326-9461. James has been taking your calls at about 9:30 Eastern time, and then we can chat about whatever you want. And I just want to make a note that I'd like to thank everyone for listening to tonight's program when you could be watching NBC's The Slap, which I think premieres tonight. Not exactly sure how they're going to get an entire season's worth of episodes off a storyline in which some guy with massive eyebrows slaps a poorly behaved child at a birthday party. But that's their problem. It's not mine. So it's a little weird. I have to say, I saw that commercial during the Super Bowl, and I just thought, like, this is the end of civilization as we know it. And there's, like, some big-time actors on that show. It's not like they found some, you know, your typical, like, 80s slasher movie fare where they just found some kids who were probably living, like, four people to a one-bedroom studio apartment or something. You got some established people on that show. I don't get that. But maybe it'll end up being really good and not just way off base. And final thing I want to note before we get started is I'm actually pleased to announce that this will be one of the last, perhaps the last Finsider radio show without intro music. And the reason for that is my brother's in a pretty high-profile band down in Champaign, Illinois, which is the state in which I live. And I'm looking to get one of their songs as a theme. And in terms of the song, it was either that or something like All About That Bass or something. And so I wanted to go with the original song. So I look forward to that, and that should be a pretty cool addition. And we can finally be a real radio show, which is the goal of it all. So once again, that number around 9:30 Eastern, 347-326-9461. James's phone manner is second to none. So you'll be in good hands, and we can talk about whatever it is you want to talk about. So anything you guys want to mention before we start teeing off on things tonight? Don't all talk at once.
I'm good. You pretty much covered anything I was interested in.
Well, actually, I'd like to ask you a few things right now, because what do you think about this rumored deal that Ryan Tannehill and the Dolphins have in the works? Like, what was your reaction to that when it came through?
My reaction to it is, given the number of years, the average is actually lower than what Dolphin got. And the rumor has been all along that Miami would look to give Tannehill something along the lines of Dolphin. I'm sure Ryan's probably going to go for more guaranteed money up front. So if I'm Miami, I probably try to push. Whereas Dolphins' deal, if you break it down, is 6 for 96, which is $16 million a year. But they can walk after this next year, meaning they've only paid him two years, $25 million. So if you push Tannehill's out, and give him a guarantee, I don't know, $35 million over 3 years, somewhere between $35 and $40 million over 3 years, where you can walk after three if things don't work out. That's a pretty good deal from the Dolphins side of things, if you ask me. Obviously, if it works out as we hope, then 7 years for 100, seven, you know, 105, 110, whatever it winds up being is a great deal.
Well, a couple of things on it. Number one is it's for a franchise quarterback. It's something Miami hasn't had since, prior to the actual millennium. So you finally get that guy down here. And, I mean, like you said, that's technically less money than what the Bengals gave Dalton. And, I mean, no offense to Bengals fans, but I would take Ryan Tannehill's gallbladder over Andy Dalton. I mean, that's – so I don't understand – I get that people see that that $100 million figure and think, well, he hasn't gotten us to the playoffs yet, so I mean, why are we paying him? Like, I mean, and while I make fun of Andy Dalton, he's had Cincinnati in the playoffs the past 3 years, and of course they haven't won any of those games, but I mean they're in the playoffs. So, but I mean I don't have a problem with the money. Like I said, this is the first legitimate, promising future quarterback the Dolphins have had since Dan Marino hung it up. And I was in, you know, I was a sophomore in high school when that happened. So I've seen enough of these guys come down the pipe to say, we've got a good one now. Pay him. Keep him in Miami. Because the second worst thing to not being able to find a franchise quarterback is finding a franchise quarterback and then letting him go just because you didn't want to pay him a decent amount of money. And if it comes down that you're worried about the team being strapped for cash, let them figure it out. Let them figure out what they want to do with Mike Wallace. Let them figure out what they're going to do. I mean, you keep hearing about Randy Sarks being a cap casualty. Let them figure that out. Let them get younger on both sides of the ball and get these guys on their rookie contracts as prime contributors instead of expecting all these high-priced veterans to get it done. But, I mean, I saw some comments on Twitter that I couldn't tell if they were sarcastic or not, and I'm sarcastic on Twitter a lot. So I try not to judge people too much. I remember last summer when Rashad Jones was out a few games at the beginning of the season, and I said, don't worry, the Dolphins have plenty of depth in their secondary. It's not a big deal. I was kidding, obviously, but I think I lost like 10 followers in like 5 minutes. Like, people did not want to read that. And I was like, so I try not to judge too harshly on sarcasm, but these people were going nuts. On Twitter, some of these guys are talking about how it's just a complete waste of money and how he's unproven. And I mean, what more do you need to see from him aside from the playoffs? I don't get it.
Man, Dolphins fans are a fickle bunch.
Oh, such a fickle bunch, and I love them, but they also can drive me nuts at times. And I mean, I've met some really awesome Dolphins fans on Twitter, and I've met some guys who just make me question humanity and whether I've been pulling for the right team the past, I don't know, 27 years now. I don't know. It can be a little bit frustrating, but I mean, the Dolphins have a good one here. If you're not convinced, that's fine, but don't turn into an argument where the Dolphins shouldn't pay him. That's crazy. Because I can assure you the amount of teams that would line up to get that guy in free agency would be staggering.
I just put a list of every starting quarterback between Marino and Tannehill on the live thread if anybody's interested in a reminder.
Yeah, that's a nice point of depression if you want to read through that list. Actually, speaking of, I just you remember the 2003 Thanksgiving game when Dallas was like the number one team in the NFC and the Dolphins went to Dallas on Thanksgiving Day and just beat the living crap out of them.
What's his name, the receiver? I'm drawing a blank. His big game, Chambers.
That was the big game.
Chambers went off, right?
He had that awesome catch at the back of the end zone. Remember where Fiedler threw the ball and Chambers stretched like what looked like 8 feet long, and he caught that ball. I mean, Chris Chambers was my favorite Dolphin for many years, and it was so frustrating. It was just such an incredible amount of talent in that guy, and yet he would just drop some of the dumbest passes I've ever seen in my life. But I loved Chris Chambers. I mean, I honestly still miss him. I get annoyed whenever a Dolphins player puts on number 84, although, I mean, he's obviously not the first great to wear that number, but it's a I mean, growing up, I really enjoyed watching that guy play. And, yeah, that was a game where he was just unconscious. I mean, he just absolutely slaughtered the Dallas secondary. And I enjoyed it. Because I remember in 99 when Marino just absolutely stunk up that place. That was an awful game.
Yeah, Chambers had he had 5 catches for 96 yards and 3 touchdowns.
Yeah, good day
to have 39, 1 for 6, and 1 for 35. And then Williams ran for another 104 yards. It was a good day. Oh, JT also returned a fumble 34 yards for a score in that game.
Mm-hmm. That was good stuff. And we had those awesome throwback uniforms on that day, too.
Yep. That was final score 40-21.
yeah, it was a beating. I enjoyed every second of it. And little did we know at that time that we didn't know how good we had it. Of course, they didn't make the playoffs that year either. Moving on a bit here, and I had to check to make sure a few things in the – I had to check the queue. I'm getting completely reacclimated to all the nuances involved with hosting this show. So there's that. And I regret to tell you people, we don't have 120 minutes. We have 90. So hopefully you weren't tied to that last half hour. If you were, I apologize. I'm a jerk. So moving on. This is something I wanted to talk to you.
But next week we can make it 120 or 180 or whatever you want it.
Whatever. It could be like the old MTV show, 120 minutes, where we just really go on and do whatever we want.
It was one of my favorite shows.
It was incredible, especially if you were into, like, new music at the time. But I just love how that show was put together. They would have this big, like, non-production. It was just, like, whatever they wanted to do that week. And I mean, they were talking about the new music, so what did you care what the show actually looked like? They have a Jimmy the Cab Driver on once in a while. A bunch of people listening to the show right now are thinking, who is Jimmy the Cab Driver? But something I want to talk to Duke about, because Duke and I typically every offseason would get together online and watch tape and figure out players we like and dislike and whatnot. We haven't been able to do that yet. I figure we'll get to that at some point. But who are you excited to see at the Combine coming up here, Chris?
Philip Dorsett.
I had a feeling you were going to say that.
Yep, that is my
amen.
That's my dude this year. 2 years ago it was Trufant, Desmond Trufant. Last year it was Austin Safari and Jenkins. This year it's Philip Dorsett. And he didn't play in the Senior Bowl, but I did get to watch some of the practices. And you know, one of the things I look for with you know, one of the things about him, first of all, is he's a guy that you can replace Mike Wallace with. Whether you replace him this year or next year, he's got the speed to do that. He's the same size as Antonio Brown and T.Y. Hilton, so I'm not worried about size. But I was watching one of the Senior Bowl practices, and actually if you go to the Dolphins' website, they do an interview with him, and they actually show this play. But I watched it as it happened on the DVR, and he runs, he puts a little move, runs a nine route, and runs a comeback route that, like, defied the laws of physics. I don't know how he broke down that quickly, and it was so fluid and flawless. And, you know, Partline is a very good comeback runner. He's very good getting in and out of his breaks. Wallace is not very good at that. But with the routes that they were running this past season, Philip Dorsett would excel in that because he's got that speed, and he's going to turn the hips of so many cornerbacks. Yet he so fluidly came out of that break, and the only reason the cornerback even challenged him was because he was so far behind trailing him when he ran the comeback that he was already in position to defend it. Had he actually been closer on his hip, he would have been, you know, 5 yards past him downfield. So that sold me right there. It's like, that guy can run routes. He's got the speed. He practically, you know, in interviews and stuff, he practically begged Dennis Hickey to draft him. So, yeah, he needs to be on the team.
So not only are you interested in watching him work out, but you want him in Miami. You want him to stay in Miami.
He needs to stay, yes. He wants to be here for one thing. He's gonna want to be wherever he goes, obviously, but he wants to stay in Miami. Miami wants to. They would love to get out of Mike Wallace's contract if nothing else. Got a guy to replace him here. I've not watched a lot of tape on him. I've tried to find some, but some of what I've seen, he looks like he would excel. He's very quick, and I think that's one of the things people about Mike Wallace don't understand is Mike Wallace is super fast. I believe it was either Patrick Peterson or someone in an interview I read said he had crackhead speed. He said there's fast, there's really fast, and there's crackhead speed. And he said DeSean Jackson and Mike Wallace have crackhead speed. But in this offense, unless you're running a go route, that deep speed doesn't really matter. What you need is quickness and shiftiness. And that's part of what Miami doesn't have at receiver. They don't have a guy that can catch a short pass and make a couple moves, get up to top speed in two steps, and do that. I mean, you watch some of those smaller receivers. Watch Antonio Brown work. It's not that he's just running deep all the time. It's the fact that he can take a little 5-yard route and then, you know, make a couple of moves and get 20 yards out of it. And that's the kind of player that I see from Dorsett. And he would work great on those wide receiver screens that we try to run all the time, the little short hitch routes, just everything. He would work in those in this system so well. And I believe Tannehill would love throwing to him. And, you know, we've seen comments on the site and other places that Miami needs guys that can take a short play and turn it into a long play. You don't necessarily have to throw these 40-plus yard bombs all the time. You need to have these guys that can make people miss and do things. We have a guy that can do somewhat in Jarvis Landry, and a guy like Philip Dorsett will absolutely enhance that. And it's in my opinion, it's just a win-win situation.
I agree. Another thing is you watch him play, and you can't help but think how well he's complimented Jarvis Landry. I mean, he brings that raw speed, and that's how I typically define a guy who can move that quickly. I mean, that guy just has raw wheels going on, and he's a lot of fun to watch. I know James is a big fan of him because James likes pretty much anyone who plays for the U. But I mean, I'm with you that I'm hooked on that guy. There's a couple I'll go ahead and preface any other comment I'll make by saying I'm a big fan of all the big-name Miami prospects coming out in this draft. You know, I like Perryman. I love Eric Flowers. I have to say that I think Eric Flowers is way underrated right now for some reason. I can't figure out why, because I've seen the other offensive tackle prospects available in this draft, and I think Eric Flowers is right up there, and I'm not really sure why he's getting overlooked by some. I think that'll maybe change over the next few weeks. It could change as soon as next weekend, for all we know. But I'm a big fan of these guys. I love Perryman. I know a lot of people have questions about his size, especially playing playing inside linebacker in the defense that was going on right now. But I like him. I like him a lot.
And one thing about these guys, especially Dorsett, is I saw the same thing 2 years ago with Trufant, and I'm going to say the same thing with Dorsett. He came into this draft process at the beginning, kind of February, beginning of January, started looking at this stuff. I do that mock draft simulator on fanspeak.com. He was like the 250th ranked prospect, 7th round, all of that stuff. CBS Sports, which is the draft board that I typically like to use when I do mock drafts, had him as a 4th round pick. He's now moved into 3rd round range. He's going to move into 2nd round range. And when he puts a 4-2 something on the board, he's going to be late first round range. And I saw a comment on the site last night about that the tweet that Philip Dorsett said about wanting to stay in Miami. And someone mentioned, well, you know, first round may be a little high for just a guy that's a slot receiver. I believe he's more than that. But if Tavon Austin can go in the top 10, who is an absolute bona fide nothing but slot receiver, then Philip Dorsett can. And that's my prediction that Miami's going to do. I'm hoping a team like Carolina really wants an offensive tackle, which they need, and there'll be one available at 14, and they will trade down, get an extra second-round pick, and then with that 25th pick or whatever, Miami's going to take Philip Dorsett. And it's going to shock some people and say, oh, I can't believe that. But they'll get over that as soon as he steps out on the field. So that's my prediction. Miami trades down and picks Dorsett late first round.
And I can't say I have a problem with it. I mean, there's a couple of draft scenarios I really like this year. There's only a couple I'm firmly against right now. I mean, I'm listening regardless. And I have to say that I'm even interested in a lot of the offensive linemen available in the first round, although I suspect that there's going to be a run on those guys. You've seen a couple of people have graded down like Brandon Scherff because they think that he's a guard and not a tackle, even though I mean, he's certainly big enough to play right tackle. He's enormous. But I think that the success of a guy like Zach Martin last year will get people thinking a little bit more, I guess you'd say, openly when it comes to these tweener-type offensive lineman. Even though it's weird to call a guy who weighs like 320 pounds a tweener. But Duke, I don't know if you're up for it, but I'd like to get some additional insight regarding the draft and maybe someone who can comment on Philip Dorsett as well. So we'll bring in our friend Lewis from Miami Lakes. Is it Lewis or Luis?
It's Lewis, man.
All right, good. I was wondering about this the other day. That, I mean, all the times we called in last year, I just thought that. I hope I'm not mispronouncing his name, because then that just makes me look even more stupid than usual.
No, no worries, man. Good to see you guys back in action.
Yeah, it feels good. I'm excited. I feel a little bit shaky tonight just because I forgot how quickly some of this stuff moves. Getting back to the whole draft talk, did you hear Duke's feelings regarding Philip Dorsett?
Yep, and I actually was thinking about that just a little while ago, because the Finnsiders with an F were speaking about exactly what it was that Dorsett brought to the table: his speed, his quickness, his lack of size. And that was what is actually on my mind right now, because it seems like there's a little pattern here with the Dolphins, is that they don't really seem to care about size so much.
Which is important. I think that's a good thing. I think that, especially coming off the last major regime we had with Bill Parcells, and only drafting guys if they fit like a certain, I hate using the term size mold, because that became a real a figure of speech on Twitter and whatnot, and it drove me nuts. But, I mean, that's pretty much what it was. Like, you had these minimum height and weight guidelines, and I feel like we missed out on a considerable amount of talent as a result of those guidelines. So I like the fact that we're more cavalier in our scouting right now. Because Dorsett is, what,
5'9"? 5'10", I think.
He's right at 5'10", yeah.
5'9". I mean, the previous regime wouldn't touch that guy with a 10-foot pole. They wouldn't care if he ran a 4'1". They'd be like, yeah, whatever, too small. I like the fact that we get these receivers. I mean, I think Jarvis Landry is around 5'11". It would be nice to get a bigger red zone type guy. Ideally, I mean, if I could clone Jordy Nelson, I'd love to bring him down to South Florida, because I watch how that guy does work in the red zone. I just think, like, man, can you imagine what Ryan Tannehill would do with a receiver of that caliber and skill?
That's what I pretty much meant, because that's the one thing that we as a Dolphins fan base have pretty much been begging for to give to Tannehill, other than a decent offensive line. We wanted to give him somebody that he can count on to help him out when he really needs it, whether it's in the red zone or whether he just needs to throw up a prayer and say, come down with the football, please. That's what players like Tony Romo have in Dez Bryant. That's what players like Brady have in Gronk, and that's A.J. Green, Julio Jones, guys like that. Somebody you can just say, I have nowhere else to go, make something happen. And usually it's a bigger receiver winning a jump ball. And that's why we've said that Wallace does not qualify for that kind of a position.
Yeah, we saw him give up on a few jump balls this year and last season, so I've seen about enough from him in that department. I'll ask you this first, and I'll ask Duke, because I value insight from both of you guys. You guys are well-versed when it comes to this stuff. We're talking about these big-body targets. Who do you like in this draft?
You want to go first, Duke?
Oh, you go ahead, man.
All right, well, I'm not the best draft prospect, but I have been speaking with somebody from my website who is really good at checking this stuff out. And a name that, and this is going to be very controversial because of what is going around him off the field, but he is really in love with Doriel Green Beckham.
I'll bet you Duke is too.
Well,
I don't even have to talk to him.
He's 6'5", he's really fast, he's got the ability to fight for the football, he's got explosiveness off the line, all of these great things. He could be the guy. Jeff Hyde on Twitter, he's the guy who works for my site, said that he could be the next Calvin Johnson, and he honestly believes that. However, the issues around him about the possible domestic violence, I think there's some drug abuse in there somewhere. I mean, there's a lot of red flags flying up everywhere around him, and that's the one thing that makes me nervous. He could either be a first-round draft pick, or he could go undrafted, depending on if someone is willing to take on that baggage. And for us, I'm wary, but at the same time, I really, really, really want to give this guy a chance, because lately the team has not been necessarily shy about something like that, because we've learned recently that Anthony Johnson was called out by his LSU coach for not caring about anybody but himself, and yet he's a Dolphin. Chris McCain was booted off his college team, and yet here he is, he's a Dolphin. So for someone like Beckham, I would be willing to give this kid a chance, considering the amount of talent he has. He's big, he's fast, and he fits exactly what it is that Tannehill needs, somebody he can just throw up a prayer and say, help, I don't have anyone else to go to.
I think he's going to be a first-rounder. And, he piqued my interest when he was at Mizzou, really before a lot of his problems started. I just remember thinking, like, man, who is this guy? And that's when he caught, not to speak for Duke, but I know that's when he caught his attention as well. Because we were talking about, we'll just call him DGB because we sound like total wannabes when we do things like that. But we watched a bunch of his tape this time last year, and I remember we were just thinking, like, man, this guy is ridiculous. You'll see the comparisons to the bigger, faster receivers. Calvin Johnson's an obvious one. What really caught my attention, though, and really made me think, just because it touched a nerve in that I remember when this happened, somebody compared his situation to Randy Moss's in 1998. And I just remember thinking, like, oh, man, because, to give background, anyone who's listening to this and is either too young to remember that, or maybe just wasn't paying attention at the time, I remember seeing, like, some clips of Randy Moss playing. I remember they were showing some Marshall game, and he caught some ball and was just dead to rights and outran, like, the entire team and didn't humiliated them in the process, where it just looked like a grown man playing with children. I remember thinking, like, and the first thing that came to my mind is, why is this guy playing for Marshall? I mean, nothing against that school, but, I mean, 6'4 receivers who run off 4'2 typically are playing for the big-time universities. And then I come to see that he was a Notre Dame prospect, and then he got in a fight, and then I think he was with Florida State, and Florida State cut him. And for mid-90s Florida State to not want something to do with a player is quite an indictment. That's a mess, because that school would, I'm convinced, would take anyone who could run a 4.3. Character is irrelevant with that school at that point in time. No offense to the Florida State Seminole fans, although I think both of them are probably agreeing with me right now. So you go ahead and you compare that situation to what Green Beckham's got going on right now. Now, I'm not saying he's Randy Moss level, because when Randy Moss came into the league in 1998, and just like the first few months of the season, people were like, who is this guy? And I remember he had, three catches for three touchdowns on Thanksgiving Day against the Cowboys. We keep coming back to the three-touchdown Thanksgiving Day games today. Yeah, three catches and three touchdowns. And if you ever see a clip or clips of that game, he catches one ball where literally every defensive back for Dallas has the angle on him. And Randy Moss just runs up the sideline and just blows past all of them. It's one of the most ridiculous things you'll ever see. He just changed that team. And that's when people really noticed. And I think at that point you had these teams thinking, like, are we investing too much in character? Because I forget what number Randy Moss went. Was it, like, number 18 overall or something? A guy who's 6'4 and runs a 4.2 and has, like, a 40-inch-plus vertical leap should not be going number 18 overall. I know that much. Especially in the 1998 draft. A man should be going number two overall, but...
I get what you're saying.
He was the 21st pick.
Okay, 21st. Yeah, my memory was a little off on that. I knew it was in that range. Because Jerry Jones, the Cowboys were picking, I think, at 18. And Jerry Jones told me he was going to take him, and then he didn't. And if Jerry Jones is overlooking him, then that's a problem, too. Because then they have to hide his draft card to keep him from taking Johnny Manziel. So.
But Jerry Jones is... Jerry Jones has come out many times saying that passing on Randy Moss was one of the biggest mistakes that he's ever made, which is why he went ahead and took Dez, who had the same sort of questionable background.
Just funny because Dez Bryant's a great player, but Dez Bryant in terms of just overall freak ability isn't even in the same dome as Randy Moss.
No.
I mean, that 98 and 99, that guy, I remember thinking at one point that he could literally just jump out of the Metrodome. It was unbelievable
to
watch that.
And he's hired an entire staff, basically, to look after Dez, which is ridiculous.
Dez has his own, like, babysitter entourage, which is amazing. That's a dangerous precedent. It's like,
He even lives in a house owned by some prominent doctor that's friends of Jerry Jones. It's all in an effort to keep an eye on him 24/7 best they can.
That's amazing. Can you imagine, like, drafting a guy and you think, like, okay, what are we going to need for him? Well, you're going to need a group of stealth babysitters to get together and make sure that this man behaves himself and he doesn't get thrown out of the nicest mall in the Metroplex. So, I mean,
whatever you need.
Whatever. I don't want to turn this into a Dez Bryant thing. I mean, I feel bad for him that catch was overturned, even though that's technically, unfortunately, it's the right call. It's a bad rule. So that's why.
Honestly, I wasn't that heartbroken because then I got to listen to Skip Bayless cry about it. So that made me happy.
Oh, that guy is such a jerk. I hope he falls in. I'd love to have him come and like, hello. You get that jerk on the phone. Well, I would just spend 10 minutes listening to James talk to him because James is a big fan. So,
I can still remember when he got run out of Dallas and how much everyone around here hates him.
Well, if he causes any problems with us, I'll just go get Troy Aikman. That'll settle it.
Troy's hilarious when he talks about Skip Bayless. That's the funniest shit I've ever heard.
I will send Troy and Papa John after that guy if he comes after us. So, not really a concern of mine. All right, so you like Dorio, or you like Green Beckham.
I like Green Beckham, but again, it's like, but you guys were talking about Moss and Bryant, but I don't even think those two had the kind of allegations that were hovering around Green Beckham right now. I mean, he's got some really touchy stuff. I mean, domestic violence, marijuana abuse, I mean, that's some touchy stuff these days, like really touchy.
The domestic abuse stuff is obviously the worst of the lot. I mean, if a guy is smoking weed, it's certainly against league rules. That, I don't really take that as a character concern. I have an issue if he continues to do it when...
Like Josh
Yes.
Both Moss and Dez Bryant have both been accused of domestic violence. And Moss was definitely accused of smoking weed, so there's not a big difference between the three of them.
Well, was Moss's domestic violence because didn't he run over
he smacked around one of his baby mamas or something. I don't know I don't remember the full story, but I remember that going down, and then he settled somehow, made that go away with money, as most of them do.
I can't support any of that. I mean, as to for whether it's true, I don't know. But, I mean, you put it really well. That's touchy stuff, especially right now. I mean, that's something where in the past, I mean, it just made your team look bad. Now it's something where you keep up that behavior in the NFL, I mean, you're gone. I mean, it's their two strikes and you're out policy. So, I mean, that's a scary thing. And you have to think, are you willing to roll the dice and invest a first-round pick in a player like that? Because
that's the dangerous part.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely gambling. You're definitely playing with fire on that one. I can't think of any more cliches to illustrate how risky it is. But
some of the stuff I've read on Green Beckham I read this week is, of course, there's the weed stuff. There was one guy on Twitter I read said, if you're concerned with Josh Gordon, add domestic violence, and that's Dorio Green Beckham. So they're very risky for teams. One of the things that I read was that he was accused of pushing a girl down a flight of steps or four steps or something.
I think the story was that he pushed her roommate out down the steps while he was trying to get to the girlfriend.
And there was a a text or some other kind of message from the girlfriend to that party that they needed to keep it quiet, otherwise his career would be over. There was a rumor that he apparently drug his girlfriend by the neck out of a room somewhere, but none of that really has been proven or substantiated other than just rumors. There was a text or something that kind of hinted at that. So Doyle Green Beckham is, he's going to win on the days you don't get to watch the combine. He's going to win in the interviews. If he flunks out the interviews, it doesn't matter if he goes out there and runs a 4.0, teams are going to, you know, steer clear of him simply because of what happened with Josh Gordon. I mean, he's a phenomenal talent, great player, can't stay on the field. You know, why would you invest in a guy, especially if you interview him, you know, and he shows up and, you know, he's kind of, they're going to look for some contrition. They're going to make sure he needs to show them that, look, I made some dumb mistakes. I'm a different person now. That's going to help him. That's the kind of stuff he's going to have to do. As far as, I don't know that he'll be a first rounder, but if he is, it's because he won in the interviews. If he's not, it's possible he could fall to the third day of the draft. And if he's there on the third day, I wouldn't mind the Dolphins taking him. I don't know that I would want them to take him earlier than that. And even though I'm a fan of him on the field, you know, just that kind of stuff is going to, you know, like I said, it's a touchy subject. Now, the good news for him is he was at Oklahoma all year. He stayed with the team. He didn't get to play. There was no news coming out of there other than whether or not he was going to enter the draft. So he's kept his nose clean for the most part over the last year. So maybe that's helped him out a little bit. As far as guys that I like, aside from him, I like some of those first-round guys. I like Jalen Strong, Kevin White, a couple of those bigger targets like that. A couple of the guys that they may target later in the draft, one that I'm kind of interested in is Austin Hill. Had a great sophomore season, tore his knee up his junior year, struggled his senior year with some stuff, but the guy has some talent. And another guy that I think might, if my kind of thought process is, if Miami completely cleans house with the receivers, they're going to go out and get a guy, a bigger target in free agency, a guy like Michael Crabtree or Keen Nix, a guy that can be that target, but they're going to get someone that's going to be fairly cheap, someone that they might can get on a 1-2-year deal. If that's the case, then they're going to look for a guy like Dorsett, say, we're going to use this guy, and then they go later in the draft, probably on the third day, and get a guy like, say, Desmond Lewis. And I can't remember what school he plays for, but he's kind of a big athletic target that needs some refinement, needs some development. They go out and get a guy like that who doesn't have to come in and start immediately. Let Dorsett or whoever and Landry kind of be the main targets, the tight end group be the main targets. The other receiver, the free agent guy, let him be a target, and then work a guy into the rotation. That's kind of how I feel they're going to do it. I don't know that I would. I still think they should double up pretty early on receiver, but it depends on who's available and where, and I could see them doing that. So, I mean, I think a guy like Crabtree would help out because I think, honestly, I think we'd be playing with a better quarterback and a more accurate quarterback.
Last note on this, and then, I mean, we'll keep it on the drafts. We'll alter it slightly, though. If you're picking at number 14, do you think the Dolphins should use it on a receiver? And if not, what position should they target?
I would go with receiver. I mean, to me, it's going to depend on the tight ends in this draft. I don't think any of them are really first-round worthy. They've got some good talent, a couple of guys at the tight end position. But if I'm Miami, I'm really looking at a skill position player at 14. I know a lot of people are like, well, we need a defensive tackle or we need a linebacker or this and that. But, I mean, look at who you think will be available at 14. You know, who's there that you'd be willing? I mean, would you want to take any of those inside linebacker prospects that high up? I don't know. Would you want to take a guy like Danny Shelton, who I think could be a good player, but would he have the same impact as, say, Kevin White or Devontae Parker? So, you know, if one of those guys are available, and my kind of hunch is I think Dennis Hickey's going to go into it, he's going to have
like three or four players pegged that if they're there at 14, I'm going to take one of those guys. If they're not there, then he's going to try to trade down. I really don't see tremendous value. I mean, you've got Brendan Albert, who's going to be coming back from injury, but when he comes back, he's going to start. You're not going to put him on the bench. Same thing with Juwan James. I don't know that I'm going to draft a guard at 14. So, I mean, it just depends who's available, you know, and what position. I don't know that there's a safety available there that's worth that pick. You know, there's a lot of mock drafts saying take Shaq Thompson there. I mean, I don't know that he fit. If you put him, is he a weak side guy, or do you move Johnny Jenkins? I mean, there's just a lot of questions at 14. It's almost like this draft was designed to either have a early pick or a late first-round pick, nothing in the middle. That's where Miami is, so at least for what we need. So I'm thinking it's going to be a receiver at 14 or maybe a cornerback, and if one of those players that they want is not there, they're moving out of that pick.
And real quick, who's your preferred receiver? Like if you – who in – ideally, who is the guy you're taking at number 14?
You know, there's a lot of – I've read a lot of stuff about Kevin White that he's being overhyped, he's being underhyped, whatever. If he's there at 14, I think he'd be a good pick. I mean, he's – I mean, you look at the touchdowns that Mike Wallace scored. He scored 10 touchdowns. Only one of them was over 20 yards. All of them were within the red zone. They were possession receiver type plays. I mean, they weren't just like, this guy is so fast we can't catch him. These are just guys. It was plays that, you know, revolved around him fighting for balls or whatever else like that. So if you're looking for that type of offense, go with a guy that can win at jump balls, a guy that's going to make those tough catches. And in my opinion, at that spot, Kevin White's the guy. And I would put Devontae Parker closer behind that, Jalen Strong a little bit behind that, and I would go with that. But, yeah, Kevin White's the dude that I think if you want to get a number one type receiver for the offense that we're playing, that's the dude. That's the guy.
How about you, Lewis? What do you think?
Well, for me, it really is no contest about this. I'm taking a wide receiver, and I've been saying for the past few weeks now on my show and on Twitter and pretty much everywhere I can get a hand on it that I really just want to give Tannehill some good weapons. I mean, we've been complaining about this for as long as we can remember now. He's had no offensive line, and that can be fixed. We think Billy Turner's going to take over at right guard, and then Shelly Smith, I guess, is going to hold down the fort, I guess. I don't know, hopefully. And hopefully that would solidify that issue. And then the only thing that's left is that we need to give Tannehill some good weapons. I mean, Hartline is okay. Gibson is okay. Matthews has fallen out of grace with the coaches, so he's okay, I guess. We don't know what we're going to get from Matt Hazel. I think he's going to be good one day, but for right now it's not good enough. So that leaves Wallace, who we're not sure is going to be around, and Landry. So we only know for sure one wide receiver. And I honestly don't see Crabtree coming here because, like Wallace, Crabtree has some diva in him. And I wouldn't want to replace a diva with another diva. That's just me.
Well, and before we go on with that, the thing that I have with him is he's not going to get a big deal. I mean, some team might throw money at him, but we're talking about basically a one-year prove-it kind of deal. I think he would shut up long enough to earn his money. So, I mean, you know, you look at kind of what Hakeem Nicks did last year with the Colts. I think that's what you would get from Crabtree. I don't think anyone's going to offer him a big contract. So if he comes in like a one-year, $5 million deal, that's kind of what I'm talking about. You know, if he wants, you know, 5 years, you know, if he wants a Mike Wallace type deal, then nobody's going to take that. So it depends. His market's going to be limited, I think. And, you know, some team might overpay for him, but I think he's not going to be signed early on. And the longer he waits, the better chance, you know, Miami might take a chance on a guy with a short, like, you know, one, maybe two-year deal that they could get out of, something like that. So, yeah, I agree with you on that. I just think they would be willing to take a chance on a simple deal like that.
Okay, if you make the assumption that his personality will be kept in check because he's not sure if he's going to get his money, then, yeah, I'll agree with that. Because as long as he keeps his mouth shut and just behaves himself, fine, go for it. Let's see what you can do. My only issue is if he decides he's Michael Crabtree and he's he should be getting the ball more, then we're back to square one, except Crabtree doesn't have as much speed as Wallace does, so we technically downgraded in that area. And
well,
whether we like
it, yeah, and so to me, they're going to use a stopgap receiver. I mean, they need a veteran guy. I don't think there's really a lot of guys in this draft that are going to come out and just blow the doors off like the 2014 draft did. So I think they're going to look at a veteran presence and kind of work in a draft pick into that other slot. I mean, they're going to need bodies out there if they get rid of Hartline and Gibson anyway. And, you know, they're going to bring Matthews into camp if he doesn't make it. I mean, like you said, if they get rid of Wallace, too, they've got one receiver. So they're going to have to get a veteran out there somewhere. And I think that's what they'll do. They'll draft some guys and just kind of work the ball around, but they're going to get cheap guys and say, all right, well, you know, my philosophy is draft a guy early, bring in the veteran, let the young guy kind of learn and work his way up, you know, earn the reps. And then, you know, the veteran guy, you release him after his 1 year and thank him for what he did, and then let the other guy start. So that would be my philosophy, and I hope that's what they would do. So that's kind of what I'm looking at. I hope it wasn't be too confusing earlier, so I apologize for that.
Well, that's what I'm hoping for then, because I want to take a wide receiver at number 14, and if we have to, we'll take a wide receiver next year if we can, because I just want Tannehill to have weapons that he can count on. I'm tired of Tannehill having to be perfect with his accuracy, and even then it may not even be enough. That game against New England absolutely broke my heart because two touchdowns dropped in the end zone deep. I felt so sorry for him. I really did. Like, I wanted to cry for him because – and I think he was getting ready to cry because every time he saw a pass drop, I think he wanted to just lay down and do the Brady thing.
Yeah, and seriously, they must have put the hex on Miami because even though we won the first game, he had that one rollout pass to Wallace that Wallace could have got his foot down, you know, we've argued over that, but I think he should have got his foot down. He had Deion Sims drop one that hit him perfectly in the hands. He had those two drops. I mean, that's you know, that's four touchdowns against New England that were dropped. I mean,
on a deep pass. We got to make that distinction.
Yeah, it's not even his fault. Yeah, I mean, those were hit the receivers in the hands, and you know, the Wallace one was a little tougher, but for $17 million, he needs to get his other foot down.
So you both agree that it's got to be a receiver at 14. I do not disagree with that. Something we can get to later because there are some other popular theories out there. While you guys agree on receiver, ESPN's draft jockeys both agreed that it's going to be a cornerback.
Yeah.
Which is, I want to get your guys' thoughts on that. I got to give props. There's a guy I talked to on Twitter often. I consider him a Twitter friend, which sounds impersonal, but his name's Zach. And Zach sent me a mock a couple weeks ago that had the Dolphins at number 14 taking Wayne, the corner, out of Michigan State. And I remember thinking, like, that's different. That's novel. Okay. And now all of a sudden, it's becoming a popular pick. So I definitely give him props. He's the first guy I saw who had that out there, and all of a sudden now it's gangbusters. So what do you guys think? I mean, are you familiar with that guy as a player enough to even comment on that? If not, that's fine. But
I'm not familiar with the player, but I wouldn't be upset with a cornerback pick if there was one, if they felt the value was there. I just haven't kept up with the cornerbacks much from this draft. I still believe in Jamar Taylor, and I'm kind of looking back on it. They never should have signed Cortland Finnegan to begin with. To me, that looking back on it now, the reason I say that is because you brought in some guys, and he was basically kind of a hedge your bet. Like, well, if the young guys take him away, take his spot away, that's fine. If they don't, well, we've got a starting caliber guy. But in my opinion, given how things turned out, all he was a progress stopper. I mean, Jamar Taylor lost reps because, you know, Cortland Finnegan was taking those reps. And even if you don't believe Jamar Taylor's good enough to be a starter, I know there's plenty of fans on the Finn side who don't, and that's fine, but at least you would know. And you still don't know what you've got with him. You don't know what you've got with Davis because they're not getting those reps. And the one thought process is whether or not good enough to get reps. But you've got to throw a guy out there at some point. I mean, at some point you've got to say, all right, you need to earn your spot. And the Dolphins went 8-8. So, I mean,
what was there to lose looking at it in hindsight? Do we go 6-10 because Jamar Chase is playing and not Cortland Finnegan? I mean, so from my perspective, they should have been playing him to begin with, and at least this season it's like, well, you know that he's starting capable or not. And so you're still left in that boat. Now you have to draft another guy when there's other positions of need. And, you know, so that – I wouldn't be upset with a cornerback pick, but I just think that's kind of – they've kind of shot themselves in the foot with that position just by the way they've done.
Okay, hang on a second, Duke. I need to ask this quick. Duke, were you with us when I brought you on to the show, and did we talk about Cortland Finnegan when you came on?
I don't remember.
Okay, well, I'm about to explain why I really think that I really do disagree with you on this. I respectfully disagree, of course, but I mean, here's why. Again, I've always said this. I wrote an article for you guys. I wrote an article for my site now that I have such a respect for not only players who have this leadership presence, but also somebody who has the ability to pass on their knowledge. I mean, I've gone back to this several times now in the past year, and we see that there are two veteran cornerbacks on the team right now, Brent Grimes and Cortland Finnegan. However, we know that Grimes is the best player. When Jamar Taylor and Will Davis ask or talk about who's helping them, it's not Grimes they bring up. They're talking about Finnegan. Finnegan is the one who has taken them aside, really worked them, given them his knowledge from when he was a star, because your body may break down, but your brain doesn't go away. That's how Peyton Manning's been able to stay alive all these years. So for Taylor, did not look nearly as good in training camp. Hello?
Somebody playing guitar?
That's what I heard. It's like suddenly guitar riff.
Boom, boom. All right, whatever. Continue.
Okay, well, when I saw Jamar Taylor and Will Davis, they didn't look really as great in training camp as Jamar Taylor did when Finnegan went down. And my reasoning for that is Finnegan had been taking him aside, tutoring him, making him a better player, showing him here's how you do this, because, like I said already, your brain doesn't shut down. Your body may not be able to do the things you know how to do anymore, but you can pass on that knowledge. Not everybody can do that. We were hoping that Danelle Ellerbe, under Ray Lewis's tutelage, would become the next Ray Lewis. That didn't happen. So you see that there are not every player has the ability to pass on their knowledge. Otherwise, we'd be hearing how Brent Grimes was tutoring these players. There's a reason that Taylor and Davis said that it was Finnegan giving them help and not Grimes. At least that's my perspective on it.
I'm perfectly fine with that. Even if they brought him on the team, that's fine. They could have used him differently, though. I mean, I think Finnegan's going to be a cap casualty. I don't see them bringing him back. I think it was Oscar Hazel on Twitter basically said when he gave up that touchdown to Eric Decker in the final game, so I think I watched him retire right there on that play. He was retiring as he was running down the field, and I think he's going to be gone. I think the Dolphins are going to say, you're not starting next year. He's going to retire, and that's going to be that. They're going to get out of that money. But, I mean
– Right, but I was arguing the fact that you said that they shouldn't have brought in Finnegan to begin with. I think Finnegan did a lot for Taylor.
I mean, it may have, but at the same time, I just think, you know, they put him out there to start, and it cost reps. I mean, Taylor may have been able to pick his brain or teach him some things, but there's no better teacher than experience. And so, I mean, he was losing reps. And so, basically, he lost reps his rookie year due to injury and stuff like that. And this was his rookie season. So, I mean, you're looking at a third-year guy who's playing like a second-year guy now. In my opinion, unless there's just a guy that they feel is just a super-duper stud at 14, at cornerback, then you just throw Jamar Taylor out there and say, you know what, it's you do it, and you either can or you can't. If you can't, we'll replace you. If you can, great. I'm just kind of, you know, let the guy play. Don't see him like, well, we're not sure if he can or not. We don't really know. Let's go out and get this guy, and you know, don't hedge your bet like that. And that's coaching to keep your job, not coaching to win. Put the guy out there and say, look, you know, I trust my guys to develop you. I've seen enough in you that I believe you can be the guy. Now, if he's still doing injury, you know, being an injury-prone guy, that's one thing. But, you know, just give the guy a chance. I mean, he's got the talent. The guy was a projected first-round pick. He was graded higher on NFL.com than Desmond Trufant was. He's the guy I wanted. So, you know, the guy's got the talent. He's got the ability. He's not talentless. He just hasn't had the opportunity to get out there and show it because whatever. So, you know.
So, okay.
So you guys, I mean, you disagree on the Cortland Sutton thing, but do you agree on the Jamar Taylor thing that he deserves, he hasn't really worn out his welcome in terms of being a potential starter? Are you guys okay with it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely not. No. He I feel a lot better now with Jamar Taylor being the second cornerback moving forward than I did last year, because I still wasn't sure what I could see from Taylor. But after seeing Taylor take the field after Finnegan went down, after a season of Finnegan's tutelage, I saw a completely different Jamar Taylor go out there. Jamar Taylor was not the same Jamar Taylor that I saw in training camp.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if Jamar Taylor is defending Davante Adams on that fake spot play, he makes the tackle, the Dolphins win that game.
Okay.
But
Taylor wasn't available, so that wasn't even an option anyway.
I'm just saying that that was more along the lines of, aside from maybe Vontae Davis, as far as the Dolphins go, I've never seen a cornerback that just, you know, makes those tackles. I mean, the only game that I have recorded on my DVR is the Vikings game. There was a play where they run this like swing pass or something. He just drags the guy down the backfield like nothing. I was like, that dude is just a monster tackler. So I like having that physical corner out there.
Yeah, so right. That's what I'm saying, is that now I feel a lot better with Jamar Taylor moving forward. Assuming he stays healthy, we're good to go. And no, I absolutely do not think we need to draft a cornerback at 14. I think that's ridiculous, in all honesty. Mm-hmm. And I think ESPN is just putting it out there now because they don't care about the Dolphins, and they're just going to follow the leader with whoever says, do this. I'm sure whenever some random guy says, here, let's pick Shaq Thompson, everybody on ESPN is going to say that we're going to pick Shaq Thompson because they're the Dolphins and they don't care.
Yeah, take that, ESPN. I'm glad you brought up Shaq Thompson, because, boy, did that guy disappear from a lot of first-round mock drafts in a hurry.
Yeah.
And, I mean, like, for a while there, I was moonlighting over at the Dolphins page on Reddit, just because I find some of those guys to be pretty entertaining. And I got into a draft discussion, and none of those guys know who I am, that I'm affiliated with this website or anything. So, I mean, I would just go out there and just kind of say, like, hey, what do you think about so-and-so? And it's funny, guys would be like, well, no, that's stupid. Like, that's just a dumb idea. And I thought, okay, that's fine. And then some guy was like, we absolutely need to take Shaq Thompson at number 14. And I was like, interesting. Please give me your reasons for believing that that's the proper course of action. And the guy really couldn't, except for the fact that Thompson's really good on both sides of the ball. I mean, is he a running back? Is he a running back? Is he an outside linebacker? I don't know, but he's really athletic, so that's great. And that, while that's really impressive, that immediately reminds me of Jason Allen, where I remember people were like, oh, yeah, we took this guy at Tennessee. He's really awesome. What position does he play? I don't know. Corner, maybe? And then someone else would be like, no, he's a safety. And the other guy's like, no, I think he's better at corner. And at that point, I was thinking, like, does this guy have a position? Okay, I'm glad that we just drafted this guy who ran a really impressive time at the combine and whatnot, and he's super athletic. But at that point, the only reason I was familiar with him is because Ronnie Brown ran him over one time when Auburn and Tennessee were playing in college. So, not in college. So,
I like freak athletes and all, but we already have a freak athlete, and we have absolutely no idea what to do with him because we think he's supposed to be a defensive end / linebacker / tight end / whatever you want to call him. We all know his name by now.
That is the coaching staff's feeling. That's not
right. So what's he going to do with Shaq Thompson?
Well, I mean, that's a very good point. But with Deion Jordan, which, I mean, I'll say Voldemort's name. I don't care. With that guy, when people want to talk about why Joe Philbin should stay and why Kevin Coyle should stay, they oftentimes I will bring up the point of, Deion Jordan, and they think, like, well, what's wrong with him? It's the fact that they have chosen time and time again to not emphasize any of that guy's strength, except that they like it when he's in coverage. Why are you trying to make him a defensive end? He's clearly not. I don't care if he weighs 270 pounds now. He's still not a defensive end. That guy should be standing up as a pass rusher. I mean, and he brings a unique skill set as a pass rusher if you stand him up. And if you want to go ahead and drop him back in coverage like they did against Detroit and he was defending Calvin Johnson at one point. Oh, man, I almost forgot the guy's name. He's defending Calvin Johnson and looking good doing it. Like, it was in the red zone toward the end of the game. You just think, like, that's wonderful. But then they'll just bring him back, and it's like, well, we can't get him on the field because he's not a defensive end. Stop trying to make him a defensive end. Because then, and you get all these people out here, and then they start buying into the fact, well, this guy is not a draft bust. No. This is a self-fulfilling prophecy, in my opinion, between these two knuckleheads. That these guys go out there and just think, like, well, we're going to go ahead and fit this square peg in a round hole, and if it doesn't work, well, then, I mean, that's his problem. No, that you guys traded up, and granted, you didn't give up that much to get him, but you have a guy with a unique skill set. I keep saying that like he's Liam Neeson or something. But the guy, I mean, we've seen flashes that guy can really play. Put him at outside linebacker and leave him there.
Let him practice there. Stop trying to make him practice the defensive end. He's in they tried to stick him at linebacker when he's been spending the whole season practicing a defensive end, and then when he fails, they're like, oh, well, we tried. Guess we're going to go back to our original plan. No, that's not how it works. You're supposed to let him practice at linebacker before you throw him in at linebacker and watch him fail doing it. Of course he's going to fail. You haven't let him try.
It's just such a waste.
He's going to be a linebacker, and I'll tell you why I believe that. I was watching that Vikings game the other night, and I was watching, I think it was the third quarter, and it was right after, this was like the series of Deion Jordan. He gets the sack, which really wasn't, he didn't really earn the sack as much because Jimmy Wilson pretty much knocked Teddy Bridgewater down, and then Deion Jordan just kind of touched him and cleared it up. But on the very next play, he lines up as a linebacker. He is standing. He's not on the line of scrimmage like a rush linebacker. He is back as a linebacker. And you see him drop back. He's in zone. There's a dump-off pass to the running back. He closes, makes the tackle, and that was that. And I thought, that dude needs to be a linebacker. I don't know how anyone could watch that play. And granted, that's just one play. But I don't know how anyone could watch that play and think, yeah, let's put him at defensive end. I mean, seriously, the guy has the size. He can do all kinds of things, but when a guy is that size, at that weight, can draw back like that into coverage, close on a running back, and make the tackle that quickly, then, you know, just put him at linebacker and you're done, you know. And, you know, against Calvin Johnson, I know there was the play in the end zone at the end of the game, but the first time I saw it, he covered him in the slot, and you'll probably never see anyone get a jam on Calvin Johnson like he did. Granted, he's a beast of a dude at 6'6", 270, but Calvin Johnson didn't get off that jam very easily.
No, nor should he. But, I mean, the issue is Calvin Johnson or Deion Jordan elsewhere is a 12-sack-a-year guy. I fully endorse that, maybe more. He is a freak. And he's something where, like, if he could get some consistency in his life in terms of the position he's playing at, I think you'd see more of that. But you get these coaches who are the smartest guys in the room, and they know clearly more than we do at this point, and that man's a defensive end. And I will say this. When we were watching Deion Jordan's Oregon tape back in late 2012, early 2013, and it was just like a fantasy to think about that guy playing for the Dolphins at that point, if you would come to me at that point and told me that Deion Jordan, like, we're going to make that guy a defensive end, I'd have been like, no. Why would you do that? You can tell, I mean, his tape screams he's an outside linebacker. Now, if you want to use him as a rush linebacker, if you want to go ahead and even put him in an elephant role, I don't care. That's fine, because he can do that. But he is a linebacker. That would be like this is a little bit of an extreme case, but we'll go with it anyway. That'd be like the Broncos drafting Von Miller in 2011 and saying, well, you're only like 225 pounds, so we're going to have you gain 30 pounds so you can play D-end in our scheme. No, don't do that. I don't care if you gain weight when he's done that, but you are absolutely misusing a guy who is, sorry to say, he's a lethal weapon. And
and really, if you look at, in my opinion, you look at another guy that's actually currently on the Dolphins that kind of did the same thing with a different regime, and that's Cole Meacy. Drafted to be an outside linebacker in a 3-4, just never developed the pass rush moves that you see. And when you watch Deion Jordan as a defensive end, he just does not have the, from what I'm seeing, just does not have the desired pass rush ability from that position to excel. I mean, you watch a guy like Cameron Wake, he's one of the best of the best, and you watch some of the things he does. Watch Olivier Vernon, some of the things he's picked up. And it's like Deion Jordan knows how to do a bull rush, but he doesn't have to rip, doesn't have some of these other counter moves when he's got his hand in the dirt. Now, you stand him up, he can use a little bit of athleticism to gain an advantage, and it works. But, yeah, the defensive end, he's just not the guy. But, you know, what do we know?
Apparently, we know nothing.
But, I mean, that's something that's got to happen. That's probably what I'm most frustrated with regarding this team right now, is just the total misuse of Deion Jordan. I understand we have other incredibly talented pass rushers in the mix, but Cameron Wake is not a spring chicken. And it's important that you get someone in there who's going to be able to fill that void at some point. And if the team doesn't screw it up, for the most part, it can be Deion Jordan. I mean, I'm not saying he'd have Wake's overall tenacity in terms of being a pass rusher, but the guy's plenty skilled in his own right. And you'd get something comparable and something you could put in its place. But they'll end up at this point, they're just going to screw it up, and then they'll trade him to some other team or for peanuts, and then that guy will go somewhere else and just completely dominate.
He'll go to New England.
Because they
always go to New England.
And what's really crazy is they talked about wanting to build this 4-3 offense, 4-3, or 4-3 defense, build this 4-3 type defense. And look at the players they have. If they drafted Danny Shelton, you've got a 3-4 defense right then. I mean, you don't have to add anything else. You put him at nose. You've got Terrence Fidee, who I believe will be a good defensive end. Keep Jared Audrey defensive end. You've got Vernon and Jordan as your stand-up linebackers. You can bring Wake in as the nickel guy, as a rusher. He's lost a step in coverage, but you can do that. You've got Meacy as the kind of a thump linebacker. You've got Jenkins, who could be the other inside linebacker. Boom, there you have it. They keep wanting to work this 4-3, and yet somehow they've added 3-4 personnel. It's just, it's interesting.
Well, supposedly they're a hybrid defense.
Well, they run some stuff like that, but, yeah, I mean, they could just work a base 3-4 and be set there and then move around in the nickel stuff. Yeah, but, I mean, Vernon's got the athleticism to be to be an outside linebacker in a 3-4, and I think he would do well. I was impressed with him, you know, in that Monday night game where he just ran down, he read out the jet sweep and just ran down Percy Harder on the sideline for like a gain of nothing or very little. So I was like, yeah, that dude's good. So they've got the pieces. Just make it work, man. I don't know.
I don't think consistency is really an issue, because they have consistently been putting him at defensive end, and they would just throw him in at linebacker whenever they felt like it. For all intents and purposes, he has been practicing at defensive end ever since he got here, and he hasn't been doing well. So I really don't think that Jordan can succeed as a defensive end, because if you've been practicing there all 2 years you've been here now, and you still haven't been able to overtake Derek Shelby, then I don't think you belong there, like, at all. I don't care how long you practice there. You're just not built for that. I want him as an outside linebacker, period. And supposedly they're going to experiment with that this upcoming season. But I will tell you this. If I go to training camp, this upcoming training camp, and I see him lined up at defensive end with Wake and Shelby and those guys, I'm going to be very upset.
That would be incredibly frustrating. So we've come to the point of about 15 minutes remaining, give or take, in the show. So I want to ask one more question, and then we'll go ahead and wrap all this up for tonight. The other popular position in terms of what people are projecting to Miami at 14 is defensive tackle. How do you guys feel about that one?
Maybe. I mean, here's my thought process on the whole deal.
and I don't know how I feel about actually saying what I'm about to say, but I believe CT and I would agree with this. But I think Miami has just kind of gone about this the wrong way. Now, I have no issue drafting an offensive lineman. You know, I think you could plug Brandon Scherff in on this line and just watch Lamar Miller run for 7 yards to carry the rest of the season. But they've gone out in free agency and got these extensive positions like receiver. And then they use the draft to get these lower-valued or less expensive positions. So my thought is, you know, a lot of fans are like, let's go out and get Ndamukong Suh, and that's a great idea and all, but he's going to cost you about $12 million a year. He's going to make a lot.
He's going to cost more than the whole team.
Yeah, why not sign Jared Odrett, re-sign him, sign a guy like, who's that, the pot roast dude, Terrence Knighton, sign him for about the same cost you get the two players.
That's a little dog.
Go out and, and that giant treadmill, and go out and overpay for an offensive guard in free agency. Go get Orlando Franklin, who's played in the zone and stuff. Pretty good guard. Has
that's a lot of money.
Pay them.
Well,
yeah, but you can create some money by cutting some guys. I mean, yeah, you're going to cut some dead weight for guys that didn't play much. So, you know, you find the money, make it work. And don't go out and say, well, let's cut these guys so I can go sign Demaryius Thomas. Use the draft. Find those guys in the draft. You know, find your top receivers.
Find your weapons.
Find your top playmakers. Yeah, find those in the draft. You're going to have to pay them eventually one day. I understand that. But get those guys in the draft and use your free agent money on the cheaper positions. Don't do it vice versa. So don't go out here and draft a guard at 14. Who he may be a Pro Bowl guard, like Zach Martin was. And Omar Kelly will mean something if you were to ask him.
Yeah, but the Cowboys already had everything else in place.
Exactly. So the Dolphins don't have that. So don't get a guard at 14 while you're paying half of your cap space to a couple of receivers. Draft the receivers, pay the guard in free agency. I mean, why spend $12 million on a free agent receiver that you don't even know is going to work? I mean, we thought Mike Wallace was going to be the guy. And, yeah, he's produced, but, half the fan base is not happy with him. The team's thinking about cutting him. If I pay $12 million for a receiver that may or may not work, when you can pay $12 million for two defensive tackles or, you know, a defensive tackle and an offensive guard, they may not work either. But then you've used your draft picks to find receivers, corners, tight ends, whatever it is that you go out there. I could see myself, if I was a GM, if they gave me that power for a day or a draft, I could go out and do it, nothing but a playmaker or skill position draft out of this draft and be fine with that. Just that's my philosophy. So as far as a defensive tackle, if you think that guy is a stud and he's going to be the next J.J. Watt or whoever, that's fine. If you think, well, you know, we can get a nose tackle at 14, and he's going to help our defense, and he'll stop the run, blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, Tannehill's out there struggling to throw, you know, 25% of his deep passes to a guy that body catches and has to be perfectly thrown anyway, or guys dropping the ball, or whatever else. You're like, well, you know, we stopped the run a little bit better, but our offense still is not very good. Who's to blame for that? You know? So, yeah, I mean, not defensive tackle 14.
Yeah, that's what I'm feeling, Sue. Unless this guy is going to be the next Ndamukong Suh and there's, like, no doubt about it, but there have been doubts about a Jordan Phillips or a Danny Shelton, then no, absolutely not. Not a defensive tackle. We can get Odrick back. If we can find some money, then we can bring in Knighton, and we're going to have to pay Clay, so we're going to have to find even more money. I'm not exactly a fan of getting rid of Wallace just yet because his $12 million cap hit is not going to – it's only – the most we could do is get rid of half of that, and the rest of the other half is going to be dead money. So
I mean,
that's only
yeah,
$6
million. You can get – as far as that goes, the Dolphins can get rid of guys that were minimal contributors and save $20 million off the cap. I mean, Randy Starks –
Okay, let's get rid of the obvious ones. We're going to get rid of Ellerbe. We're going to get rid of Wheeler. We're going to get rid of – Who else? Who do you? Who else do you have here?
Brandon Gibson, Cortland Flanagan, Randy Starks. Right there, I would even throw in Hartline, even though I kind of like Hartline.
Hartline is willing to restructure, so I'm not going to throw him out yet.
All right. He's going to create some cap space there. Throw in Brandon Fields if you have to. I mean, I don't think they'll get rid of Earl Mitchell, but you could cut him before. I think he'd do like a bonus right at the same time Wallace is. They could cut him with no dead money. You can create it if you need to. I wouldn't cut it simple because you need the depth to. But yeah, you can save $10 million off the bat by Finnegan and Starks. I mean, those are guys that are either going to be rotational guys or you're going to replace anyway, and you save, $10-plus million by cutting them. Brandon Gibson, you can cut $4 million off the cap by getting rid of him, and he's a guy who had, 20 targets or something. You don't need that guy. Ellerby's got a $9 million cap hit or something, and the guy played three snaps. He's already been replaced by Jelani Jenkins. You don't even need him. He's as good as gone. He might as well start packing. You can designate Phil Wheeler as a post-June 1st cut and give him an additional couple million out of that, and that guy was pretty much getting paid a pretty penny to ride the bench. I think he was averaging 19% of the snaps or something. People worry about, we're cutting this guy when he's depth, but you're cutting guys that weren't even playing last year or much, Aside from Finnegan, who started, would anybody miss those guys if they left that much?
Probably
nobody
not.
Would. So nobody's like, we're losing Brandon Gibson. Who cares? That's why you drafted Jarvis Landry. So, yeah, they can create some cap space. They may not create, I think the Sun Sentinel said they could create up to $40 million. I don't know how they pulled that off. I didn't read the article, but. I just saw the headline for it, but yeah, they can find some money.
No, that's a good thing, because if we're going to take these recent reports to heart, it's that these free agents necessarily want to come to Miami because of the uncertainty of the coaching position. They want a place that they know for sure is going to be their guy going forward, not Joe Philbin, who's a dead duck anyway, no matter what happens unless they make the playoffs.
Oh boy, I've thought about all this many, many times over the past 2 months. So, we're gonna go ahead and tie it up for tonight. I didn't even have to contribute much tonight. It was perfect. I just let you two.
You went on a lot about Deion Jordan.
Yeah, that whole thing is so frustrating. I'm frustrated with this coaching staff as a whole. I'm frustrated that a move wasn't made. The only thing I can think of is if you give it another year, then you can consider Lazor as a head coach, and then you can go ahead and fix what needs to be taken care of right now, which is the defense. So, well, that's just my 2 cents for tonight.
Why we're here. We're here for you to vent, man.
Yeah, it is venting, too. It was great to have both of you on. And I consider you guys special guests. I hope that you'll join us again next week so we can talk probably about the same things. But
we'll be
care.
Here, man.
I look forward to it. So we can talk about the combine weigh-ins, or the start of them at least. In the meantime, James, are you still there?
I am. I'm right here.
You are.
How come you never talk?
He's like the Wizard of Oz, kind of like the guy behind the curtain.
I talked quite a bit at the beginning of the show. You just missed it.
No, yeah. I was listening.
James greases the wheel so this show can go. So thanks. It was wonderful working with you again. I'm glad to have you back as producer, and I look forward to doing this many more times over the next weeks, next month, or next few months, and we'll see how it goes.
Yep. I'll try to be on as much as I can.
All right, yeah. Stop promoting your own show when you're on here. No, I'm just kidding.
I didn't say anything.
Nah,
I didn't even say the name of the website.
I'm not a company man. I don't care what you do. So for everyone, James, my special guests, Duke and Lewis, I'm Keith. I'm back hosting the show every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern. I can say that because I'm in Central. So I don't want to give you guys the wrong time. So until next Thursday, it's been fun, and we'll talk to you soon. Good night.
Good night, guys.
Good night, gentlemen.
Good night, everyone.